It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
I feel that we had to go in a different direction, and that's why I did that today. This change, the change that we made today, that I made, I believe will bring new energy and positivity that will lead to more wins starting now.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 302, McMonagle here with you on this Wednesday morning. Obviously, the night, the morning after the Yankees take a 2-0 lead, beat the Cleveland Guardians 6-3. Have a day off today, and we'll head to Cleveland for game 3 tomorrow night. And just a couple things. Obviously, we talked a little bit about the game and how the Yankees have been playing, and despite that, and, you know, Judge going off finally and getting the home run, sacrifice flying, a big spot. I mean, that was a big spot, too, against they bring in Smith. I didn't even mention this part, that they intentionally walk. I mean, obviously, that's a big part of this game. They intentionally walk Soto to get to Judge in the second inning, and they bring in Smith, Cade Smith, they're, you know, arguably the best reliever outside of Class A, obviously. I mean, that's a big spot in this game. And a moment that really, I mean, again, I love Judge, but Soto, he's not walking just the typical three hitter. Soto's one of the great hitters of this generation. He's on a Hall of Fame track. We all know how great Juan Soto is. And at the time, I kind of understood, listen, it's setting up a double. I don't think it's as insulting. It's Juan Soto, and it sets up a double play in a spot where you're trying to stop giving up runs, and Judge has been slumping. So, I mean, I don't think it's jaw-dropping, but it's a surprise move. You know, it's a gutsy call from the manager to, you know, walk Juan Soto and pitch to Judge. And Judge, you know, comes through. He falls behind 1-2, and he does get the sacrifice fly. It's not the double in the gap. It's certainly not a grand slam, but it drives in a run, and it sets him up for what happens later in the game with the 2-run home run. So hopefully Judge is starting to come out of it. And, you know, despite that, still winning without Judge doing much. But there is still a conversation about this offense, because unlike one of the last callers mentioned that the Yankee offense is fine, it's not fine. Right? I think we could all, again, there's a gray area, and I think we can all admit that this Yankee offense has been given enough opportunities where we shouldn't have to be sweating out some of these games. Like, let's just be fair. I'm not giving away or taking back any of these victories. I'm not going to feel anything other than jubilation when they make it to the World Series, if they do. I'm not going to be like, well, they beat Cleveland. I kind of felt that way against Kansas City. It wasn't so much that Kansas City sucks. It's just like, oh, man, they just couldn't lose that series. And it was relief more than joy. But getting to the World Series, I don't care who their opponent is. This is the ALCS. But having said that, we know what the starting pitching looks like for Cleveland, and they've had multiple opportunities, the same thing in the beginning of this game, and Judge and Wells has been killing them. And it's obviously been a topic of conversation on Yankee Twitter with the fan base. You could sense it. Whether or not to keep Wells, and they even talked about it in the postgame, keep Wells in the 4 spot behind Judge, because as much as Judge has struggled, Wells has been just awful. And Wells is not Judge. Wells is a rookie catcher playing probably the most games of his career down the stretch of a long season, and he was great for them. And him becoming the legitimate cleanup hitter and one of the better, you know, as far as OPS goes, one of the better hitting catchers in the sport, quite frankly, over the last second half of the season, was a major turning point for their year and got them where they are. But that doesn't change the fact he's struggling. So the question is, what do you do with this lineup with Wells in the middle of Judge and Stanton with kind of, even if Judge gets going, you're talking about an easy out in between Judge and Stanton. So there's been a lot of talk about it, and while I'll say this, whatever the Yankees do, I am not opposed to keeping, and it's funny too, because the fans, we all, stability, I want the lineup. Every, you know, we want the same lineup, I'm sick of the lineup changes. We hear that all the time, and maybe that's over the course of a regular season. In the postseason, maybe you feel different, but as long as they're winning, I don't have a problem keeping it. Like, I know that's, I might think it's the right move for the offense to make the change, but there's something to be said that they're winning. So I don't know what the Yankees are going to do. I'm going to tell you what I would do. But whatever they do, even if they keep it and keep Wells hitting cleanup, I can't go nuts. They're winning. They've won 5 of 6 games, and you don't need to change what's not broken. And if Wells ever comes around, it would be the best thing possible, and I'll tell you why. Because here's the options. The options for the lineup is to move Stanton up and just move wherever you put Wells, which would probably be even further than 5, to be honest with you. I think most people would tell you move Stanton up and then put Rizzo behind Stanton and go from there. The reason I don't love moving Stanton up is because I do like to keep the lanes, as they like to say, for the relievers of Cleveland having to worry about, no matter what they do, they're going to have to face a big-time hitter with a pitcher that's not a great matchup. And if you put, you know, Judge and Stanton back to back, it's not so much the righty-righty of Judge and Stanton. It's what happens after that. Because you could argue where you're going to put Volpe as the right-handed hitter, but if you just switch them, they got Wells and Jazz next to each other. You bring in a lefty after Stanton, you've got two outs right there against lefty pitching in Wells and Chisholm. You could move Volpe up, but then you've got Rizzo and Verdugo. A lot of that bottom of the order then becomes left-handed. But I do like the idea, if a reliever has to come in for Soto, and you say, hey, I got Soto, Judge, and Wells coming up, let me bring in the lefty, because the next three guys, in the rule of baseball, you have to face three guys. I gotta bring in a lefty so I can get Soto and Wells. Well, now I know I'm getting Judge against the left-handed pitcher. Right? Same thing. If it's Judge, at least I got Wells facing a right-handed pitcher. Or the bottom of the order isn't just lefty, 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 and I have a legitimate right-handed hitter. If it comes in with Wells, they have to go, oh, well, I got Wells, Stanton, Chisholm. Do I go lefty there to get those two guys out? Well, now I got Stanton hitting a left-handed pitcher. Like, I do like the lefty-righty, because especially against this team that's clearly going to go to their bullpen, I want to make it a tough decision for this manager, and I also want to guarantee one of my guys, or even two of my guys, getting the opposite hand and having a more comfortable at-bat. So I don't know if I would move Stanton just right up to fifth. It's not the worst idea. I don't hate it, but I do like the dynamic of lefty-righty, and making it a tough decision and at least getting one of my guys the right kind of at-bat, not giving a clear, oh, let's throw in a lefty and get two lefties in a row at the top of the inning, and now, okay, I got to face a right-handed hitter, but I got the first two outs. Like, I like the idea of that middle guy getting the at-bat against the opposite hand. So let's say I want to keep it lefty-righty. Now the second question is, who would I replace him with? And while I absolutely think Rizzo has shown enough, and it's been amazing, and another credit to Boone having the guts to go to Rizzo with broken fingers, not having at bats. I mean, who wouldn't have thought that Rizzo would have struggled offensively? Like, who wouldn't have thought that Rizzo, with broken hands, who really wasn't hitting all that much prior to this injury, would all of a sudden come here and give you arguably the best, most consistent at bats of the lineup? Outside of maybe, you know, Glaber and Soto. Like, that's how good Rizzo's been. So it's an easy switch, right? Especially Wells struggling right now. You could put him eighth, and you got Rizzo in the four spot. And while I don't hate that, and I would understand it, and I'm certainly tired of seeing rallies ruined because Torres and Soto get on base, Judge hasn't been swinging it great, and then Wells has been awful, and Rizzo would help in that fact. Here's my only problem with it. What does the bottom of the lineup become? Because if you look at this game, the bottom of the lineup is kind of what won it for them. You got Volpe gets on three times in this game with two singles and a walk. Rizzo with a single and a double. Verdugo, a double and a walk. They score three runs this part of the lineup. They score three. And they're getting on base, and Volpe's giving you good at-bats. If I put Wells, or if I put all my top guys, if I move Wells down, if I move Chisholm down, if I do all that because those guys are struggling and I need my best hitters at the top, while that sounds right and I understand that thought process, I also don't want my, you know, just three outs in the middle at the tail end and feel like, well, now, you know, the sixth inning I got 7-8-9 and I got no confidence in anybody on 7-8-9. I like spreading out some of the better hitters. I don't mind Rizzo hitting seventh or eighth and providing good at bats at the top of the at the bottom of the lineup. Why? Because if they get on, now I got guys in front of Gleyber, Soto, and Judge. So I'm kind of torn on the whole thing. But if I'm going to move, I mean, I do understand the Rizzo move. I do. Rizzo's been giving you good at bats. I want him in the middle of those rallies, but I also don't want the bottom of the lineup to become a barren wasteland. And now you could argue the three names I said, Volpe and Verdugo, would still be there, but Chaz has done absolutely nothing. Wells has done absolutely nothing. Like, do I give Jazz a chance to go in between and see if he can get hot in between Judge and Stanton, getting better pitching? Do I put Rizzo there? He's been killing them, no doubt. But they haven't been losing. They've been winning. They've won 5 of 6. He did have a really good at-bat his last time. He had a long, deep at-bat, and he hit a bullet to right field in Wells. I don't know if I'm in a big rush to make that move just yet. Because what Rizzo's providing at the bottom of the order, making a difficult, you know, a guy who's going really good at the bottom of the order, helps. And clearly it helped in this game. And then the other thing let's get to, the other talking point out of this story, out of this game, I mentioned the Soto getting intentionally walked in front of Judge, which was an interesting move from the manager, but I thought the right one. And Judge does come through with the sacrifice fly. I don't know if it would happen again, but it happened there. It made sense early on in that game. The other thing is the base running. And there is no doubt. And Aaron Boone can say anything after the game, and I get it. You want to be aggressive. And with Chisholm on at second base there, and then Volpe on behind him, the idea of the double steal there is great because if you remember the situation, it's the sixth inning. It's 3-2 at that point in the bottom of the sixth. They just scored the two runs in the fifth inning. So now it's the bottom of the sixth. It's 3-2. Jazz leads off with a double. And during that Volpe at bat, I was afraid of the walk. I didn't want Volpe to walk. I would have rather have had Volpe hit the ground ball, even if it's an out, hit the ground ball and move the runner over to third. Because the walk sets up the double play for Rizzo, who doesn't run well. And even though he's had good at-bats, if Rizzo puts the ball on the ground, it ruins the inning. Like, I'd rather see Rizzo with a runner at third, infield drawn in, with an opportunity to... Because right there with this bullpen, I'm looking for one more run there. I'd love the beginning, sure. But I'd really want the one run to make sure I no longer am one swing away from a tie game. So if Volpe moves the runner over to third, and now I have Rizzo with a drawn-in infield, which obviously ups his opportunity to get a base hit, or just the idea of a sacrifice fly, I almost felt better about that than the walk setting up first and second, and now a ground ball from Rizzo ends my inning, pretty much. And I was really scared of that. So the idea, once the walk happened, of the double steal was legit to me. Like, I wanted the double steal. And in the post game, that's pretty much what the manager said. Boone says, you know, we're looking for the double steal, but here's the problem. Like, you can't get caught off the base. You can't execute it that poorly. And with Rizzo up as a left-handed bat, it's a little bit tougher. It's a clearer path for the catcher to throw to third base. So it's not an easy double steal. I understand you're trying to get a jump there. But you can't get doubled off. And here's the other thing about it. I know everyone's going to scream and cry about him, clamoring for the look after the swim move slide and wants to get a replay when clearly he was out. You got to attempt. Once you're picked off, you're not going to get back to second base. You got to be smart enough to try and get into a rundown and see if you can make that out at third and get Volpe to second base. Like, so many of the little aspects of it. Obviously, you can't get picked off. You got to make sure you don't leave early. I like the aggressiveness of the double steal. I don't want to take that away from the Yankees. I don't. Not in that spot. Rizzo can't run. A ground ball gets me out of the inning. I like the double steal. I like being aggressive there. I do. But you got to make sure you execute it. And then when you're in the rundown, he's standing there waiting for the pitcher to make a move. Don't stand there and wait for the pitcher to make a move. Run to third base. See if you can get into a rundown and allow Volpe to run behind you and get to second base. So now at least you have a runner in scoring position. Like, the whole thing was executed poorly. Then Rizzo gets the base hit. They do. Volpe has great base running where he sees the bobble in right field, leads to the run. You got Rizzo at second base, and Rizzo makes, without question, the biggest boneheaded play of it all, because you're Anthony Rizzo. Where are you going with two outs? You're trying to get the third on a ball in the dirt. You're in scoring position. You cannot make that out there with Gleyber Torres up, who's been the best clutch hitter and the best singles hitter and the best guy to just put the ball in play and not strike out of the entire team. Like, the Anthony Rizzo one is just absolutely boneheaded. But if you look at it, so many different things there. You can't get picked off. You got to at least attempt to get into a rundown instead of trying to go to second base. And then Rizzo, what the hell are you doing trying to get into better scoring position with two outs where you're going to be off at the crack of the bat? Like, none of it made... It was a terribly executed inning. And nobody described it better than the great John Sterling, who had one of my favorite calls. And I don't know if it's just because he's not coming back. And I don't know, like, it's not that he's never been critical of this team, but you can hear it in his, like, there's been a couple of calls here where he has no problem getting on the Yankees. I heard one where he got on the Yankees for infield position when Kwan hit a base hit through the shortstop hole while Volpe was playing kind of up the middle, and he wasn't happy about the Yankees' positioning. But if you listen to John Sterling when Rizzo makes the final out on the base path of the sixth inning, it's one of my favorite calls in John's illustrious history. Here's John Sterling.
Here's the 0-2, a bouncer, and Rizzo is going to be picked off. He's in the middle between second and third. Hedges now throws to second, on the way to third, back to second, back to third, tagged out, end of inning. Boy, if that wasn't the Yankees, that's what they do. Run the bases like drunks.
Run the bases like drunks. This is what you got to admit. They're making mistakes. You can't do that. You can't do that in a playoff game. You just can't. And I'm sorry, maybe I got into it's 3:19 in the morning. It's not a Yankee podcast. I'm getting a little bit into the baseball stuff of it. But, like, those things, that can't happen. And Chisholm has to know to at least attempt to get into a rundown and give Volpe an opportunity to try to get into scoring position. Which, by the way, Volpe's an excellent base stealer. They haven't done any, like, they really haven't tried to be aggressive. And I know they're winning, but I would have loved to see Volpe. And they've had multiple chances here. And even in Kansas City, and you saw what Kansas City did with Ramirez. They have first and third. I'm surprised Wells even threw down. There are times first and third, especially with one or two outs, where you won't even throw through because you're afraid of a run coming to score. And the Yankees had multiple opportunities with speed, and they still haven't attempted to really steal the bases. They've been very, Boone might want to talk about being aggressive in that spot in the base path, and I do love the double steal there. It's a tough spot with a lefty hitter. And it's one of those situations you can't be wrong in the start of an inning. You just can't be wrong. You can't execute that poorly. Jazz has got to be better. He's done nothing at the plate. He's played a very good third base, even though he did have a mistake where he overcut Volpe. I'm not sure they get Lane Thomas on that ground ball anyway. But He's been great defensively. He's given them nothing offensively. He finally gets a double and trying to do too much. And here's why I'll defend Boone again. I don't necessarily think that it's coaching. He hasn't been here that long. I really don't think it's that they're not coached properly on the base path. I don't. I think that's Jazz Chisholm trying to do too much and wanted to make sure he got a good jump if they were going to double steal. You can't get out of yourself there. You got to stay in. You got to stay in the moment, and you got to make sure you don't make bad mistakes like that. But to the critics' point, and to every Yankee hater's point, they're playing a team where you can get away with it. And we'll see if they make it to the World Series and if they can get away with it then, because my guess would be they can't. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls a little bit. Bell in Manhattan. What's up, Bell?
Hey, how are you, Chris?
Good. How are you, buddy?
Stay awake, then. Don't fall asleep.
I would never fall asleep.
Yeah, I was going to... I actually told the screener that I wanted to talk to you about the walk to to Soto.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with you. It was a very, very bold decision, but they used to walk Barry Bonds with the bases loaded.
Yeah, but the point is that Aaron Judge is Barry Bonds in this situation.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, 100%.
Well, I'm just saying, like, Judge is Barry Bonds. They walked Bonds with the bases loaded. They didn't walk Jeff Kent to pitch to Barry Bonds.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
This situation is they walked Jeff Kent to pitch to Barry Bonds.
Right.
That didn't happen.
Right.
So, it would have been different if they walked Judge or you know, something like that. But they walked someone in front of Aaron Judge to pitch to Aaron Judge. And I believe it was the White Sox who did it earlier in the year, and Judge hit a 3-0 fastball for a grand slam. And I'm hoping, and it happened with Vientos, right? Michael Kay brought it up on the broadcast in the postgame. We've talked about it. Vientos took it personally. You should take it personally. Now, again, they walked Lindor. Hard to blame them. And while Judge is Judge, and it doesn't matter who's in front of him, you wouldn't think they'd walk him to get to Judge. It is Juan Soto. But you should take that personally. And that's a ballsy move from the manager. I'm not bashing what Vogt did. I'm just, in every situation, he had real sound logic to do everything he did, including walking Juan Soto to set up a double play and Aaron Judge, who hasn't been swinging the bat well. I thought it made sense. Everything was sound. All the decision-making, pulling Bybee when they did, going to Smith in that spot, making sure they don't give up more than three runs. Like, I'm not trying to tell you that he made panic moves that were, bad decisions. What I'm saying is it sent a message to his team and to the Yankees, kind of, to me it did, that we are desperate to win this game. We don't think we can win this series without winning this game. We need to go out there and do this now. It might put us in a, I know we have the day off, so the bullpen is fine, but, I mean, he went to his guys where if they take the, I know you got to get through that to even consider ever getting a tie game or getting the lead, but, I mean, they pulled all of their levers in the first three innings of this game. They went to their best in the fourth inning, so first four innings of this game. By the end of the fourth inning, they went to their best bench piece. They had a defensive replacement for him because he can't play the field with an arm injury. So they had a two-player move that already took off their best bat off the bench and now reinserted a miserable hitting catcher into the lineup in the fourth inning, and they had already gone to their best reliever. Like, those are typical kind of elimination game type moves. Those are the kind of moves where you're desperate to get the win. Now, if you're thinking along those lines, every one of those moves makes sense. If you are desperate to win this game, if this is a winner-take-all, I go home if I lose this game type of situation, then every one of those moves have perfect logic. They make plenty of sense. It's setting up to keep them in that game to help win that game. But it sent the message of we're treating it as such, and although some of the moves worked in the moment, it didn't prevent the Yankees from winning the game and winning the game easy. Because then you're forced to throw different guys later in this game. They go eight pitchers deep. They throw in Lively, who was added to the roster before the game. and the Yankees still come out on top, and you still can't get to Cole, and the Yankees' bullpen is better than the Cleveland bullpen in this game. I just think it's a clear message that no matter what you do, like Ace Ventura. Ace Ventura 2, When Nature Calls, one of my favorite scenes that I repeat quite often. He's climbing whatever mountain, and the helicopter comes through. He's like, "You gotta get. If I were you, I'd get down from that mountain." And Ace Ventura says, "Well, if I were you, then you'd be. If you were me, then I'd be you, and I'd use your body to get to the top. You can't stop me, no matter who you are." That's what it felt like with the Yankees and the Guardians last night. It doesn't matter who you are, who you bring in, what decision you make, how you try and stop this thing. We don't even have to play well. You can pull all the levers, all the stops, do everything you can to keep this game close. We'll make base running poor decisions. We'll have bad at-bats with runners in scoring position. We'll do everything we can to, you know, not play a crisp, clean game. And you could do everything you can to pull all the stops and make it close, and it still won't be. That's a good spot to be in. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. Well, if you were me, then I'd be you, and I'd use your body to get to the top. You can't stop me no matter who you are.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
Swung out and missed strike three. Put up my books. And to the New York Mets, California, here we come.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Ba-da-da. All right, well, since we're at it, and listening to John Sterling, I didn't hear the Aaron Judge home run call, which, by the way, I was debating on saying this because there's no proof. I should have tweeted it. But in this at-bat, I turned to my wife, who is amazingly still up, you know, not paying attention to the game at all, going over the photo shoot she had that she took the boys to for the Christmas card or whatever, you know, the real important stuff while I'm living and dying with the New York Yankees. And I turned to her. I said, "This is the spot. Judge is going deep." I did. No one's going to believe me. It's okay. I should have tweeted it. I'm so stupid. I've been on target with the Yankees. I nailed the score of game four with Tiki and Evan, and I'm telling you, I knew that home run was coming, something about it. And I was actually disappointed in him, to be honest with you. This game actually bothered me more than some of the others because I thought he was starting to turn it around. And in this game, in the first inning, on that pop-up, he had two pitches to hit. Two really good pitches to hit, and he pops it up with first and third. All he needs is a fly ball, and he pops it up. And then even on the sack fly, it's a good at bat. He gets a 97 mile an hour fastball down 1-2 and gets his hands through and hits the fly ball. But I was expecting more after being intentionally walked. And then he flies out in the fifth, just getting underneath another really good pitch to hit. So up until that spot, I was actually kind of more frustrated. And that's probably where my prediction came from, because if he ended up having another bad at-bat or not coming through in that spot, it would have been, for me, the first time where I'm like, well, now I'm concerned because I saw signs of him coming out of it, and now I'm seeing missing pitches in the zone again. But nope, I was right. And here is John Sterling's call of Aaron Judge's home run, one of many to come here in the postseason, as I'm sure it will lead to him not being able to make it out the rest of the way. Here's John Sterling.
Here's the 1-1. Judge hits a high fly to center. Back goes Thomas on the track near the wall. She's gone! Aaron Judge hit the ball so high you wondered. It came down in Monument Park. It's a Judgeian blast. All rise. Here comes the Judge.
It was high, and I think I saw somewhere that it said it was actually the highest pitch in the zone, the second highest pitch in the zone that he's hit for a home run this year. I mean, he's getting underneath it a little bit, but he's so damn strong. If he gets those arms extended, even in center field with the wind whipping, he's going to get it out of here. And that's a big home run. And hopefully it opens him up. Hopefully this is the beginning of him getting hot here, because they could use it. Because let's be honest, as much as I'll tell you, the offense has struggled a bit. And, you know, I'm pleased with how they've played overall. They've won 5 out of 6. I don't care. Like, to that caller's point, I agree. I don't care how you're playing. I don't care the mistakes you're making. I still see enough out of this offense, certainly. They're just missing a couple of big hits. But, I mean, whatever mistakes they're making, they're doing more good than bad. They've played excellent defense for the most part. I think they've played well enough to win. They've played winning baseball, no doubt. But as much as we're concerned and it's constantly, oh, it's so tight and it comes like the offense can't come through with clutch hits, it's not like the other guys. Yeah, Chisholm's been bad. Yeah, Wells has been bad. But if Judge has 2 or 3 base hits in a couple of spots, namely the first inning of these games are blowouts. The New York Yankees are cruising to the World Series right now. And I know it feels like they are now with all these wins, but I mean, these games aren't even close. You don't have to throw. Weaver wouldn't be pitching this much. You wouldn't have to bring in Clay Holmes in a tight spot in the fifth with, you know, tying run on third base. It's just a couple of hits from the best hitter in the world that could change these games from being tight white knucklers where you're nervous that you might blow it to just absolute laughers. It doesn't take much. It just takes a couple of better at-bats from the best hitter in the world. And if he becomes that again, look out. And you know what? I don't want to hear it. I don't care. I fully admit the competition. I'm seeing a lot of, oh, wait, if we get to the World Series, it won't matter which team. They won't compete. They don't compare. They compare. Cleveland might not compare. Kansas City might not compare. Detroit might not compare. The Yankees compare, baby. That's what you're seeing right now. The Yankees are notorious for playing down to their competition. In some ways, they are. It's still good enough to win. Let's get to the call. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Well, it's about time somebody woke up.
That's right.
I mean, and if this is the beginning, let's just say this is the beginning of the end of this 15-year drought.
Yeah, I mean, this. It's crazy to think that they are now, you know, I know in 17 they got to a Game 7, but besides, like, this is as close as they have gotten to the World Series in a long time. They are 2 wins away, and it's amazing. But, yeah, and again, I need it bad. I need it bad, Stu.
I need it bad. More special is since the other team got there.
What would be more?
If the Mets got there, that would be really special.
Yeah, I mean, we have plenty of time to do the Subway Series, and I did a lot of it yesterday a little bit. I don't want to keep harping on where this many wins away, but we are.
The Guardians, I'm sorry.
No, they are. We're 5 wins away, 3 from the Mets and 2 from the Yankees from a Subway Series, and I agree. Mm-hmm. I think it would have more juice than it had in 2000. I think considering the Mets run here, and thank you for the call, Stu. Considering what the Mets have done here and, you know, the Yankees and Judge and Soto and the conversation between where Soto's going to sign in free agency next year, like just everything about this. And I think this is now the first time, and I was actually on a sports radio station in Canada, TSN. I guess one of their producers listens to the show every once in a while. So he called me and asked me to come on this morning, and I was talking to them about this. I would think now, and again, it's I'm a big Yankee fan. It was after the game. It's still only 3:30 in the morning. We'll see how everyone reacts tomorrow with the big Met game on track for 8 o'clock. I would think now, Judge hits the home run. They had the standalone game in the ALCS. They're up 2-0. I would think finally now the Yankees have entered the realm of hype, at least somewhat close to what the Mets have been dealing with for 2 weeks. It's felt like the Yankees, even though, you know, Yankee fans have been all on it, of course, just the overall tone of the city, the feeling, you know, part of it has to do with the competition the Yankees have dealt with as opposed to, you know, Philadelphia and now the Dodgers, the super team. That's definitely part of it, but it's the heroics and it's how long they've been doing it. I mean, it's been 2 weeks. The watch party here at the station for that doubleheader against Atlanta, the hurricane surrounding it, like all the games they had to play leading into it, the way they struggled. I mean, there's so many different storylines around the Mets. They go to Atlanta, fall on their face that first night. Then they go to they go to Milwaukee and don't play well in those two first games. Manaea, who's been great, gives up the grand slam in the first inning, and it's just like, man, oh man, they're going to blow this thing. Then they kind of get lucky in some way where that the Diamondbacks didn't play well down the stretch. They have the doubleheader against the Mets, the Lindor home run, and away we go. Wild card series, pressure in those three games, the Alonso home run, blowing it in game two, then the Alonso home run, then they play Philadelphia, while the Yankees have been waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And hell, they clinched the division 3 weeks ago out in Seattle. No one gave a damn the last week of the season. The Yankees didn't treat it like it mattered. It clearly didn't matter. You know, it was just biding time to wait for this moment. And in that time period, the Mets have had a freaking opera. And it's just felt like the story around the Mets is so much more compelling, so much more interesting, so much more juice. And I would finally think now, even though it's the Guardians, even though everyone thinks they're going to win this series, it is still two games away from the World Series. Judge hits the home run. Everyone watched last night. There was no other games being played. There was no Giant game. There was no Jet game. There's no Met game. It was the Yankees on a standalone game. Judge hits the home run. They're two wins away with an off day heading into Cleveland. Like, I would think now, hopefully, that the buzz is going to start surrounding the Yankees as much as the Mets. Maybe not as much because of the nature of Mets-Dodgers. But I still think now, hopefully, we'll start to have a two-team race here. But ultimately, we are five wins away from a Subway Series that would be, in my mind, through the roof of with excitement. Just through the roof. My guy, Mike out in Merrick. Mike, how are we doing?
Yo, Tima.
Yo, Mike.
Yo.
Yo. Mike.
T-Mac, get a step from the Yankees, dude. This is the Met town. This is the Met city, baby.
If you say nobody, it will be tomorrow night, not tonight, it's not. This morning, it's a Yankee town.
No, hear me out.
Okay.
All the Met fans from going to the Gimmons luncheon do not want to hear the Yankee talk.
Well, I don't know what to tell you.
No, hear me out. This is the Met city. We're going to rock City Field bound with the Dodgers. We're going to embarrass them. Three games in New York, baby. And the Mets could be in the World Series Championship, baby.
There you go,
here,
Mike. It might happen, Mike. It might happen. But right now, it is still a Yankee town. It's still a Yankee town till it's not.
No, it's not.
And yeah, no, for 2 weeks it's been a lot more noisy from the team in Queens, no doubt about it. I just gave you a nice long run up to why I feel that way. It has been because the Yankees, you know, and you want to blame them for it, were good enough to clinch the division with a week left to go. They didn't need no doubleheader at the end of the season just to get in. They were clinched. You want to penalize the Yankees for being good? Go ahead. Penalize the Yankees for being good and winning the division. Over this stretch, the Mets have had this miracle run where they are hitting as many clutch hits in every big freaking spot as I've ever seen a team do. They're playing their division rival, the Phillies. They're playing the powerhouse super team, Los Angeles Dodgers, while the Yankees are just going about their business, beating whoever's in front of them. So yeah, right now, is the noise a little louder? Sure. Is the conversation a little bit more interesting? Okay. I'll buy it. But a Met town? It is not. Not yet. Not yet. It is still a Yankee town, my friend. And the day I don't get, and the day nobody wants to hear my Yankee talk, you must be out of your mind. We're talking Yankees here, especially after taking a 2-0 lead, two games away from a World Series. You still got to get there. You're not as close as we are. You got to keep up your bargain, Mike. You got to keep up your end of the bargain. And we'll see if they...
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I can. Later today.
Need to get out of a meeting? Call the Fan. 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS Live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 350. McMonagle here with you on the Fan. We could take a break from the baseball just for a second. And obviously talk about the Devontae Adams trade with the New York Jets that I found out about someone, as I was kind of sleeping. I did have a dentist appointment today, but that just, I'm telling you, that's the thing. Every once in a while, you got to do things. But that's the thing about the schedule. You never need to be somewhere at 3 o'clock in the morning when most people are sleeping, but there are just days you have to be somewhere at 1:30 in the afternoon. Anyway, Devontae Adams to the Jets, a trade that needed to happen. Let's just be fair. All right, I understand there's like some talk that the Jets season is over. The Jets season is not over. And this is a team that has to make the postseason, and a general manager more specifically. Like, as we talk about firing the head coach and we talk about firing the offensive coordinator, you know, Woody Johnson has one other guy in his crosshairs, I would think, who, as much as he might tell you this is the most talented team he's had, or like, the GM's been here for a long time. GM still has a problem fixing the offensive line. GM still has a problem, a bunch of stuff. And this was supposed to be, when they went out and got Aaron Rodgers, a team that makes the postseason and ends this ridiculous drought. You have to still, at 2-4, with the talented roster the Jets have, and two winnable games coming up against Pittsburgh and New England, this is still a trade very much worth making. It's a third-round conditional pick. You absolutely have to do it and go for it. There's really no other option. And I still believe in this team. And I still believe in this quarterback. As much as, you know, I felt like he played fairly well, if not better than that, the other day. And I've put losses at his feet, specifically the Denver game. We went through all the reasons why they lost the other game, Aaron Rodgers not being one of them. This offense has an opportunity. We saw it, 400 yards of offense in this game. We saw Breece Hall finally have a big-time game, 100-plus yards, 100 yards receiving for Lazard. I know a lot of that is the Hail Mary, but 100 yards to Wilson. This team is still talented enough to go out and compete in the AFC. This is not a trade that doesn't make sense. I don't want to hear the same old lazy takes of, well, does this fix the offensive line yet? We all know Tyron Smith looked awful in the game. We know the offensive line has been somewhat of an issue for him. We know that he's getting beat up back there. We know that. We know there's issues stopping the run. We understand what the defense looked like in the first half of this game. There's issues that go deeper than just adding a wide receiver. But my God, still, whether Aaron Rodgers is fair or not in his criticism, whether it's the right thing or not to throw the wide receiver under the bus, there are still wide receivers who are expected to compete in this on this team and help them win who aren't on the same page as the quarterback. Bringing in one of the premier wide receivers, and I still believe he can be that, in this league, and reestablish that connection. I know the connection between Nathaniel Hackett and Aaron Rodgers. We thought we were reestablishing something there in a relationship. It clearly hasn't been the same. But on the field is different. And you need to bring in someone who can not only help on the field, but also do what Randall Cobb was supposed to do last year when Aaron Rodgers was on the field, and be that guy who sees it the same way, who can talk about it the same way, who can help the other receivers get on the same page. Because clearly, as big a fault as any in this offense, in my mind, is the inability for any sort of cohesion here. And still, the you know, Mike Williams down, you know, going down the field to hopefully win a football game, which they had every opportunity to win. I mean, that's the other thing. Yes, they've lost. And we understand the penalties and all the nonsense that still is at the root reason and the root cause of why they've lost these games and why even when Rodgers plays well, like he did Sunday or Monday night, excuse me, it might not have been vintage Aaron Rodgers. It might not have been a Hall of Fame or an MVP caliber player, but that's still some of the best quarterback play this franchise has seen in forever. And it's better than what they got in Zach Wilson, and it's better than what they've been handed over the last few years. And I thought it would be enough considering the rest of this roster to be able to win a game that they absolutely had in their hand. And yes, they miss field goal kicks, and that's part of it too, and that's okay to say, by the way. I mean, the amount of people, I don't want to hear blaming the kicker. Why not? That's not the only reason, but I don't understand why you can't blame a kicker for missing a 32-yard field goal when you thought you had a good one. Greg the Leg last year was excellent for this Jet team. Now he's missing game-tying 32-yard field goals, but we can't give him any criticism? He's got to make those kicks. That's not the only reason. We know what the reasons were. We went through them yesterday. But that doesn't change the fact they are a missed field goal and a couple of plays away from beating Denver, which is nothing to take a bow over, but a win in this league is nothing to sneeze at either. And they were right there to beat Buffalo. Right there to beat Buffalo. This is not a season you abandon in any way. You have got, there is only one choice. Go all in. Add every great player you can add. Go try and end this drought. Because I'm telling you right now, if you get out of your Jet fandom, I know 2-4 seems impossible in many ways, but that's just the Jets. Like, and because I would venture to say, and I said this yesterday, ask a Jet fan honestly if they believe the Cincinnati Bengals are done at 2-4. And I would venture to say that you do not believe that they are dead and buried, that Joe Burrow can lead this team back, that they've shown the ability to come back. And even though they play in a damn good division with more than just one team as something that stands in your way. This Jet team at 2-4 has the team to make a run. You've got to win the next two games. You need him in here as soon as possible. And you need Aaron Rodgers to get as comfortable as possible with his receivers. And I don't know what this means for Mike Williams. I don't care what it means for Mike Williams, quite frankly. This is a trade that had to be made. It's not something that suddenly thrust them back into the Super Bowl conversation we were all trying to have at the start of the year. It's not something that automatically lifts them over the next two games and back at 500 and says, well, here we go. Here's the new look Jets and everything's different. No, but it's an improvement. And this is not lipstick on a pig. It really isn't. Not for me. This is something that can dramatically help this team because they are a couple of plays on this offense away from being 4-2 instead of 2-4 and in first place in this division. And yeah, they got to stop creating penalties. 11 for 110 is unacceptable. That didn't seem to help firing the coach. The offensive line's got to play better. The defense has got to play better. The special teams got to play better. The quarterback's got to play better. This helps a lot of those problems. And we'll see what he is. And even if it's a failure, it's one you have to take. It's a risk you have to take. You have to go all in. You have to go make this move. The GM has to make the playoffs. The quarterback has to make the playoffs. Because I don't know how this ends for Aaron Rodgers, but coming to the New York Jets with this talented roster, all the hype around it, having the NFL, you know, be excited to the team where they force hard knocks upon you, and you know, you're an MVP candidate at the start of the year, a lot of trendy picks out there for Aaron Rodgers to win the MVP. You can't come out here after that injury, after a documentary is going to come out about how you heal, you know, making such a big deal out of the rehab and how quick it was and all that stuff, just to come back to fall on your face and lead this Jet team the same place Zach Wilson led it? Can't happen. Can't happen. And I firmly expect him to be better. How much better? I don't know. And how quickly will it make them better? I don't know, but it better be fast because, again, they have to go win two games. Now, it sounds like Russell Wilson has a legitimate chance to be the starting quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers on Sunday night. I don't think they have a great quarterback either way. I would think it probably benefits the Jets for a switch to a quarterback who hasn't played yet this year. But either way, this defense has got to show up and go play an offense that hasn't been successful, one of the worst in the NFL, and figure out a way to make enough plays against a really talented defense that has right now the odds-on favorite for Defensive Player of the Year, who just forces fumbles at will, apparently. And that defense in that building can be pretty freaking devastating. And maybe this will bring some excitement. Maybe this will bring some enthusiasm. Maybe it'll cause a riff inside the locker room. I have no idea. But if you think this isn't something worth trying, or you think this is too little too late, you might be proven right, but it doesn't make the decision the wrong one. 888-808-1019. You have to go make the playoffs if you're the Jets. You have to. Have to. 888-808-1019. We'll take your phone calls on the Jets. I mentioned the Giants and their injury to Andrew Thomas. Let's just, I mean, as integral a part of what they're trying to do and as important as a player as it is to winning on the team. There's just no two ways around it. And if he's going to be gone for an extended period of time, he's going to see a special foot doctor. I mean, if, first off, this season's not going anywhere, have the surgery. I mean, but it's going to make Daniel Jones's life a hell of a lot harder. And what we've seen what Daniel Jones does when he has pressure. And the offensive line was coming together. He was having, you know, games and moments and drives where he was given some time. We saw him develop a chemistry, obviously, with his number one wide receiver and neighbors, which is something he's never had. And if you had the offensive line coming together with a Pro Bowl, All-Pro caliber left tackle, you had these weapons starting to emerge. Hopefully you were getting neighbors back. You might have had the chance to see the best Daniel Jones. What scares me now is the offensive line will fold underneath this. You know, Evan Neal's back in the mix, or whoever else is back in the mix. This offensive line is going to struggle, and we will see the same quarterback play, and we will see the same offense that is bogged down by bad offensive line that we've seen over the last handful of years. As important as neighbors is, as important as a run game can be, as important as Daniel Jones is, Andrew Thomas is as important a player on this team. We saw it last year when he went down on the block punt against the Cowboys. Like, this team doesn't function the same. The quarterback doesn't function the same. And they're 2-4 as well, trying to figure out how to turn their season around. It's going to get to the point where, and here's the other thing, we've had a lot of discussions about his contract, Daniel Jones, and we've had a lot of discussions about the injury clause in it. How long are the Giants going to play this quarterback on most likely a dead season with no real confidence in protecting his blind side? And a quarterback that holds on to the ball too long, quarterback who drops his shoulder when he runs and looks for contact. How long does that quarterback get to play with a losing team who's terrified he'll get hurt and they'll have to pay him next year? This Giants season might look dramatically different in just a few weeks. Right on time for Halloween. Fantastic. It's better over
here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in, trade-in, service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Come join me, Andrew Filippone.
And me, Patrick Peterson, three-time NFL All-Pro cornerback on First and Pod for premier NFL coverage and conversations.
Our motto on the podcast is every team, every week, and we don't play favorites. Every episode, you get a glimpse of the entire National Football League with First and Pod. Follow and listen to First and Pod on Mondays and Fridays on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.